You wanted about my political life or what?
Well, we're just going chronologically right now. So we ended last time when you went away to college.
Oh, really?
And your brothers, the war was gearing up, so one of your brothers, I think, had already joined. Jack had joined.
Oh.
So that's kind of where we were going to pick up. So you went off to college.
Yeah.
So what was Berkeley like in 1938? Is that when you went, or 39?
38. The end of 38. Well, Berkeley was very exciting. The political thing was Czechoslovakia. Yeah, it was the fear of Germany going into Czechoslovakia. And I mainly studied hard because I was working my way through college and getting scholarships, so studying was like, you know, earning my college. But I also was active in a PE. They thought I was a PE major. They even gave me the sweater that had the C on it that all the PE majors had.
Who's they?
The PE department.
Oh, because you played on the teams?
Yeah, I took all so much athletics.
But you were actually studying food science?
Food chemistry.
Food chemistry. How'd you pick that?
Well, I was going to take dietetic. One of Daddy's friends had suggested when I go to college that I ought to take home economics and write. Do a home economics, write for foods for the newspapers. So I started my first semester, and it was just so easy, and it just seemed so unimportant that I thought, oh well, I'll get into food chemistry instead. Take chemistry, take something substantial. So that's how I got into food chemistry, just accidentally.
And what was going on in food chemistry back then?
At that time? The main thing, I know my major professor was working on cholesterol. That was like the early work on cholesterol was done there in the Berkeley labs.
On whether it was beneficial or harmful, or just what it was?
I don't know exactly what she was doing. She was studying cholesterol. I suppose I didn't follow it. It was when I was starting to graduate that when I was thinking perhaps of doing graduate work, that's what she was doing, but I wasn't interested in it.
You decided you didn't want to go on in food chemistry, or the war had caught up by then?
Oh, Jenny, I don't know. Do you want to know all my immaturities?
Sure. We're all immature.
Oh, gosh, it was all so ridiculous. See, I had, I really was in love with a guy named Bob Isbell because he was real smart, and he lived right next door. And, but he had a girlfriend, and so I was really very immature, and I didn't know. So anyway, I just thought, well, that time, you know, I might as well, I'm going to have this guy, I'm in love with him. So I actually married Gordon Huntington.
He was a student there?
He was a student in soil science, a very nice person. He actually was a split up in the Huntington family, his father. I mean, he had big diamonds that he gave me. But that's about it from the Huntington family. And he had that resort little area up in Meadow River country, Oroville.
You mean his family owned that?
His father.
Uh-huh. So they weren't maybe the wealthiest part of the family.
No, mm-mm. They weren't.
Sort of an offshoot.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you married him after you graduated?
No, just before I did.
Oh.
So then came the war, Pearl Harbor. And that affected everybody, even like Bobby was up there, Nona was up there, Gordon.
Up there where?
In Berkeley area.
Oh.
Yeah. I know Bobby came for a while, for about a year at Berkeley, and Evelyn was there. I was rooming with Evelyn for a while, and Bobby came and lived with us. We had a pull-down bed, and that's when I met Bob Isbell next door. Lucky I never married him. He turned out to be, well, his family had a business, which was gravel. And, you know, so he ended up being a businessman of a small business. So anyway, I married Gordon, and I wasn't really very happy. And so I joined the Navy.
You got a divorce and joined the Navy?
No, I joined the Navy before I got a divorce.
Did you inform him of this after you'd done it?
I don't remember at all. You know, I just...
Just a way to break away.
Yeah. So I really was in the Navy as Betsy Hunt Huntington. You'll see it on my...
And that you joined
in
43?
I graduated in 42, and I joined within a half a year.
So probably early 43.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go back a little bit at Berkeley. What was it like for women there? Were there very many women? You said you had a woman professor. Was that common?
And PE.
I thought the food chemistry professor was a woman.
Yeah, she was a woman, yeah, in foods. Well, I didn't think of it much. I mean, people were pushing you. Like I was Phi Beta Kappa and Sigma Xi. Sigma Xi is a science thing like Phi Beta Kappa. And I remember them trying to tell me, oh, you know, we should have more women engineers and we should have more women. They were encouraging me as a woman student. It's true. There was that. I remember Berkeley, we wore these saddle shoes and skirts and blouses pretty much. Of course, I was very poor and I couldn't afford the more expensive things. But nobody wore pants at Berkeley in those days. It was
almost like a uniform.
Almost like a uniform, the skirts and blouses and sweaters and saddle shoes.
Was there what you might call a bohemian?
Oh, there were a group.
Life there?
There were a group, and I didn't like them. What do we call them, beatniks? I used to think of them as people who didn't, you know, want to do anything. And yeah, they were right next door to us. There were some beatniks. But kind of dropout people, I thought.
So you weren't involved with that at all?
No, but it wasn't, and Berkeley didn't have it all over.
Oh, you mean like in the 60s or something?
Like now.
Yeah.
Where they're up and down the streets. No, there wasn't that. But there were some. What did they call them? Beatniks.
I thought the beatniks were 50s. But they called them beatniks way back then. Berkeley was always ahead.
Yeah, Berkeley. Yeah. And at Sather Gate, there was the Communist Party at Sather Gate. Handing out literature, but I didn't read it. The only group I migrated towards was the Fellowship of Reconciliation. I was one of an anti-war group, but it was so religious, you know, it's a religious anti-war group.
So the war was gearing up, but you were interested in anti-war ideas, but couldn't really find anything?
Well, this is what I said about my generation in general. My generation was anti-war. We were the children of the World War II, World War I, and everybody knew it was a useless war. And our parents all told us that. And so there was this anti-war feeling in general. I mean, it was sort of a general feeling. But they started drafting, 1939, late 38 or 39, they started drafting. And so I would have liked to have been against the war, but that was the only group, and it was religious, and so I didn't get involved. So I actually didn't get involved with any political thing on campus. My father used to call me a communist because I went to Berkeley. And then, I mean, he was really pretty mean about it.
But your mom was very proud of you.
Oh, yeah. And he was proud of me going, but...
So Berkeley,
but Berkeley was known...
Left-wing reputation.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
But in
the Reds are there.
Well, you didn't come across it much.
No, now, I had a professor of French. I took French. Who was Haken Chevalier, and he did make an impression on me. And he was the one that wrote this book about, the scientist that headed up the nuclear research.
The Trinity Project? He wrote
Alamo.
See,
because the cyclotron was there at Berkeley. They were building the first cyclotron. Stuff was coming down the walkways in between the buildings. And I had a friend. My friend, the one political person, was my chemistry. He was an assistant, a teaching assistant in chemistry. He actually hired Bob to do some work for him. Well, he had a lab there. Libby was there. Libby is the one on the atomic bomb later on. But they were doing research on cholesterol. And my friend was doing work with strontium.
Strontium?
Strontium.
Yeah.
That's why eventually he died of a liver disease. But that he was doing research. But he became a conscientious objector. And when I went in the Navy, we corresponded. And he's the one that actually started me on political activities, because when Daddy and I got married, Don DeVault used to write to me, and then he came to see us, and he said, you ought to read this magazine, take this magazine. You know, he knew that we were interested like in civil liberties, but I wasn't political at all. I didn't have any kind of a political education. So he started us on the Progressive magazine. That was my, it was becoming
a... So he was the one who was the conscientious objector. His name was Don?
Don DeVault.
DeVault. And at Berkeley, you said
he was my chemistry,
he was the professor, actually.
He was
the
like
teaching
assistant.
And he was the one who was working on strontium?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mentioned it because, he was important later on, because he was the one that got me started reading the Progressive, being a liberal, he was very conscientious. His father's the one that invented this,
the apple peeler?
He's the one. Well, Haken Chevalier was the one. See, there was a Communist Party cell there that I didn't know anything about. I mean, aside from the people at the gate, and I didn't read their things. Because I was just busy studying. To me, the war just interfered with my life. I wasn't political.
Mm-hmm. You're a very serious student.
Yeah, I was a serious student. And but Haken Chevalier was apparently in a Communist Party cell, small grouping. You know, the Communist Party is this ridiculous. you know, they're kind of like made themselves underground when they could have been perfectly legal, that sort of thing. That's what they were doing. And he was there. Why can't I remember this scientist? He's so important.
Oppenheimer? One of the Alamo scientists?
Yeah.
Was it Oppenheimer? Was Werner von Braun there?
Oppenheimer. Is that his name? Oppenheimer.
He was the one who had been involved in the Communist
That's
Party.
That's it. All right, then Oppenheimer.
And so they kind of held that over him, didn't they?
Yeah, Oppenheimer was there, yeah. And Haig and Chabaya wrote the book about it.
About Oppenheimer?
Yeah.
And his Communist
what he did,
Party.
How Oppenheimer betrayed his wife, who was in the Communist Party, and others. Yeah, okay. Oppenheimer. So it was my French teacher who was it later, or who apparently was involved at this time.
And he wrote a historical book about it.
Yeah. Gosh, I must have lost it, but we had this book. It was called Friends. Oh. See, he was deported eventually. And Oppenheimer.
To France?
Yeah. So what happened with Oppenheimer was that, see, they wanted it, he was offered to head up the Los Alamo project for the, but they went to do a security check on him. Well, he had talked with Russian scientists about the possibility of a bomb being made. Instead of saying that, he lied and said that he hadn't talked with these scientists. Well, they knew he had. So from then on, that's how he betrayed so many people. From then on, they held this over his head. This lying, that he'd lied on this, that he really knew this, that he did, you know. So that's how he ended up betraying people.
And yet they did let him lead that project.
They did, but after it was over, then they smeared him for his communist affiliations earlier. But anyway, so that was... I wasn't aware of all that going on, but that was Berkeley. Mm-hmm. Way Berkeley was. It was a center, scientific center. It was very exciting to be there. I loved it. I lived in a different part of the, every time, you know, I had housing in different parts, so I lived in all the different parts. And we didn't drive cars then, you know, we rode a bike.
It was a very small area. You lived in the Berkeley Hills?
Well, a little bit up, you know, one time, and then on the east side, the north side, south side, the west. That's where I met Jem Trimble and her husband Bob Trimble, and her brother, and then there was one other. Those three scientists. And two of them were in love with me, and one with her. And they had this idea that the two of us should room together, and then I should cook for all of them.
Oh, nice.
Which I did, because they were all afraid that I wasn't eating enough, which is true, I wasn't eating very much.
So they provided the groceries that way?
And I cooked.
So they were actually looking out for you, not abusing your friendship?
Yeah, that's what happened.
Did you have to work? Did you work while you were there? You had
well,
summer
I did
jobs
things like washing chemistry glassware, and I did, and I took little jobs like I used to work for a Japanese couple that had a regular maid, and then on the maid's night out, I would go cook and do things for them, things like that. And then in the summer, I always worked up at Sonoma.
Wasn't there a story of you working for a rich woman and
disliking that so much?
What was that?
That was one of those. Yeah, when I first went up there, I didn't have my scholarship yet. But I was so determined to go, I went with my $70 that I had saved from for working the entire summer, taking care of these two girls, $15 a month. I lived up there in L.A. taking care of them while my mother worked, and I had $70, and that's what I started up there with. That's all I had. Then, but I had applied for a scholarship. So I went, I got this job to go work for her. And she wanted me to wear, you know, a white apron and a hat, and she was trying to impress everybody. And this is when she asked me to make the turkey gravy, and I didn't know how to make the gravy. I know now, I learned, but I didn't know then. And I really messed it up. But I hated that. I just hated that. And they only did it that one time, so it was Thanksgiving. So I got the scholarship right after that. So I didn't have to do that anymore.
Did you like the kids?
The little kids that I took care of?
Yeah.
I've got pictures in there showing me.
So they were okay?
Yeah, cute little.
Mom,
they were like
so
two
great.
And three or something. Three and four, maybe. They're little kids, yeah. And the mother, oh, you know, she was a single mother, and she had to have somebody stay with them. I actually stayed with her. One time I burned the applesauce, and my grandma gave me a new pan. I burned the pan, you know. I learned about applesauce, you know.
So you hadn't learned how to cook much
no,
growing up
I didn't
in your
know.
House. So.
No, I didn't know how to cook much. Grandma.
So were you thinking that already of having a big family at that time, or were you career-oriented?
Well, I always wanted to have a family, solve the problem of the family. Why? Why do we have these non-functional families?
But were you what were you thinking you were going to do with your college?
Well,
work?
Then I wanted to, that's why I thought food chemistry. I could do something that had to do with foods and still have a family. That
did you see yourself as working as a scientist and having a family, or was this
no.
kind of confused? Or?
No, just something that I could make enough money. You know, and I can remember saying things like, I want to help my mother. You know, when I went to college, they were in bad straits. Dad had, didn't really have a job, and you know,
but
so
they
I went
to Sonoma right
yeah,
around
they
that
did,
time,
uh-huh.
shortly after.
But when I first went, my idea was I wanted to be sure to be get a job that could help my mother. And so that was, yeah, I wanted to do that. See, when I studied food chemistry, basically what I learned, and I could have, if I was, had been an ambitious woman, I would have been in on the ground floor of things like frozen foods, frozen juices. This was all coming out of the lab. Plus, I was taught, part of it, I was taught how to organize a factory. So I can remember, there was this guy in my class. It was mostly women. There were about five of us that were in this major. And this guy was just an average student. But I just remember coaching him, because I thought to myself, he's the one that's going to do it.
No. Is that what happened, or do you know?
I don't know if he ever did. Probably did.
And that was just because he was a man and would
go on? Yeah, he
was
a man and would go on, yeah.
Huh.
And that wasn't my orientation, but that's what we studied. Those were the early days, and Berkeley was the best mm-hmm. school. When I went, I had this junior scholarship to Danforth, Purina. It was like a summer fellowship. And they had one from every college around the country that had food chemistry, any kind of foods. And that's how I knew, seeing them, meeting the others, they did and so on. My purple was just the best huh. in this area. It's since been moved up to Davis, all the stuff that we studied. Because actually I got a bachelor's in agriculture.
You got
I have a BS
a bachelor's in agriculture.
That's what it was.
And it was a specialty in food science.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's food technology, too. See, that was the idea of being able to organize a factory.
Hmm. You would have been good at that.
If I wasn't so oriented towards having a family.
You organized a family instead.
And then comes the war. And that's another thing. The war just messing up my life. You know, because the war affected everybody. World War II. It wasn't like even Vietnam or Korea didn't affect everybody. But World War II affected everybody.
How?
Well, first of all the men went. You know, like Daddy. That's what he did. He joined just like that. And all over the country, people were joining. The men went. And then there was rationing of things like sugar, especially sugar. I don't know why, but rationing of sugar. And just all sorts of everything stopped. You know, they stopped making civilian goods, they geared up to make war goods. And
was a pickup in the economy noticeable?
When
there were more jobs?
Yeah, basically that's what World War II got us out of the Depression. Because basically depression conditions, I lived all my life, all my childhood and junior, in depression conditions. You know? Like when I, like the first year when Jen Trimble, their family lived in L.A. See, her father was like an executive in Hughes Tool down there. Well, I went down to L.A. I thought I could get a job. I could not get a single job. That's how bad it was.
And this was
And it would have been 39. I could not get a job.
Not even a waitress? Or?
Nothing. The only thing I got was going around with some guy selling vanilla door to door. And this guy, he would take us and then he would tell us to lie that we were, you know, married and had a child. I mean, you know, not selling the vanilla, but selling
a
sob story. And I just couldn't stand that. So I didn't stay in L.A. I went back up there. Now, there was work in Boyce Hot Springs. That's where I did work. You know, a little resort. I worked at the counter making milkshakes and sandwiches and stuff. And Bobby worked in the tomato, they canned tomatoes. So there was work out there in the agricultural sector, but there was nothing in L.A., just nothing. I told you the story about why I hate beer, because when I went to work at this hot springs, there was this guy, he was going to get married. We sold beer, too. And I was 18, you know, but I guess they didn't care. Anyway, this guy was drinking all this beer, and he's getting married, and he's getting drunk, and finally he just takes his beer and he just throws it all over me. I mean, there's just beer all over me. It smelled so awful, and of course, my dad being an alcoholic, I didn't want to drink anyway, but that really... I never ever tasted beer even because of that.
So did that start to turn around, what, 40, 41? Or not,
yeah.
Until the U.S. entered the war?
Well, they started the war production.
Before?
Like 39, 40. And
even
so.
Though they weren't actually. When was Pearl Harbor?
41.
End of 41?
December. December 7th.
It wasn't 42.
It might have been 40. I think it's 41. 42? 41.
Well, when the White U.S. entered the war.
December 7th, they bombed Pearl Harbor.
So even before Pearl Harbor, they were gearing up for war production.
Oh, yeah. The U.S. forced Pearl Harbor on Japan. You know, they wanted Pearl Harbor, as you later knew. But I was already married then, I guess. So maybe it was 42. Because Evelyn was there. Nona, Evelyn was there. And Gordon and me, when we heard about Pearl Harbor, Nona was in the area.
And you were graduated just?
I graduated in 42.
So maybe it was the end of 41.
Well, we could look it up. Isn't that really ridiculous to forget that date? But anyway, Pearl Harbor. That was, yeah.
And that kind of broke the anti-war sentiment.
Well, as I remember talking to my mom, my dad rejoined, all my brothers joined. My dad went back in to the service.
After Pearl Harbor?
Yeah. He went back as a cook in the Navy. And Tom went in the Marines. He was at Guadalcanal, the very first battle of the war. Bob went in the submarines. And Jack was in blimps, Light of the Air. So, and heck, I said to my mom, I didn't believe it. No, I didn't believe in the war. You know, my mom says, Betsy, all your family's in the service, and this way she said it, and they're burning the Jews in Germany. That's what she said. You should care about this war. So I said, well, I joined up too.
Were a lot of women joining? Were they actively recruiting?
Well, Aaliyah worked training people. Who else was Rosie the Riveter? Oh, one of the women that comes to the vigil, Bernie. She was a riveter, one of the Rosie the Riveters. So it was either being a wave or being a shipbuilding. Women worked up here, this Reynolds Aluminum. They built that during the war, and it was staffed by women. One time I got up on the top where the crane is and the controls for the crane, and all the directions were all women. There was pictures of women that came from the war too.
And there were a few women at the machine shop I worked in San Diego who had come there during World War II.
During World War II, yeah.
And never left.
Yeah, they were the what you call Rosie the River, and they were working on. So that brought the economy up. Yeah, everybody says it. It was World War II that ended the Depression. It tells you something too. All those years.
Mm-hmm. So what did it mean to join the Navy? You were married, but they sent you somewhere?
I went to...
stationed
somewhere
else?
But since I was an... I had graduated, they made all of the waves was kind of new, you know. So they made all of the women with degrees officers. So I was sent to Smith College, which was an education to me, seeing these rich kids go to school.
Why were you sent to Smith College? What was the
well,
Navy
we
doing
did,
there?
Well, that's where they did the officer training. It was like a 6 weeks training course to be an officer. And so
that's
we had...
So
we were
struck
in,
you there?
Oh, yeah, that's rich girls. Well, was it struck me was, well, we were in a dorm, and all the food was made for us, you know, I mean, like the dorm food. And that's where I first had blueberry muffins. I'd never had a blueberry muffin. And this was fair for these college kids, you know, they had these good cooks and making these nice things. Another thing, we used to have to march. We always marched in a platoon across campus. But the women, they wore jeans. Now at Berkeley, nobody had ever wore pants. But they could wear jeans around, and then of course they had all the money to have nice dresses and whatnot when they wanted to. So that's what they noticed about the rich girls there at Smith. So I went to Smith, then I got my assignment, and I got assigned to Oklahoma. That's how you find out when you get in the service, how bad it is, you lose your freedom, you know. I wanted to go into meteorology.
Where did you get that idea? That's a new idea.
I wanted to go into meteorology because that's where the men get trained, you know.
Were you divorced by this time?
No, but in the process? I got sent to Norman, Oklahoma, and it had two bases. Norman had two bases. It had a big base, and that's where I was sent, where there were like 10,000. And then it had a smaller air base where the pilots were. I was put in charge of a barracks, like a house mother for a barracks. And I was 22 years old. And I had these women, these poor women. It was like a prison for them. They were in this dorm. I know that women's prisons now are better than what they had. They had a bunk bed, and a locker, like a school locker. That was it. And then they all had one bathroom, the head, they call it, because you're in the Navy, where they would go. And they were strict. Like, I had to go in the morning at 6 o'clock, and they had to come out and get in line, you had to check. They had to have their hair short. They couldn't wear fingernail polish. It was terrible. And these are all women like that are office workers, that are, you know, competent women. And I had to be in charge of this barracks, I tell you.
So had they trained you at Smith to do discipline? That's what you learned? Or were you pretty much on your own?
Well, yeah, basically they just teach you your anti-democratic stuff, like you're the officer and you command and you don't say please and stuff like that. I mean,
so you were ill at ease?
Oh gosh, I got myself into trouble.
How'd you do that?
Well, because I went and fraternized with the women. They used to go over when they were ironing clothes and stuff like that. I got in trouble because one of the women, you know, didn't like me, you know, some jealousy or something, and she told the top brass that I was coming over there. Well, you weren't supposed to do that. I also was in charge of some Marine women, too. They had a barracks full of Marine women. It wasn't a good assignment.
How did you find out that the women were office workers? Or what did you find out about their backgrounds?
They worked there on the base.
Oh.
As secretaries and so on. They were enlisted women, yeah. They were not college women.
Mainly straight out of high school? Were they younger than you? Were they inner city women?
They're probably about my age mostly. I don't remember too much about it, but I got in trouble. That's why I see all the time I've been applying to try to get into meteorology. So I did. I got sent to MIT.
For the Navy to train you as a meteorologist?
In meteorology, yeah. That's why I met Daddy.
So and that was a big got you out of
trouble.
Yeah. Oklahoma. how long were you at Oakland?
Oklahoma, probably not even a year. Because I was applying all the time to try to get into meteorology. And I was so thrilled going there because my father, MIT was such an important college to my father because of his friend, the engineer. And for me to go to MIT, that's the first women that went there, were the women in the armed forces.
It had been an all-male college?
Yeah, it was all-male. So it was a big thrill to go to MIT, and that's where I met Daddy.
And so you were a student there, essentially?
Yeah.
And was he a teacher?
He had been in the class before me, and then, he was so good, of course, and they wanted, he and one other guy, Budrica, I think he was, were held over to help teach our class.
So he had actually graduated. Is that what you mean by held over?
Well, he had finished the meteorology program. I don't know if they call it graduation, certification or whatever. And so he was the teacher. That's where I met Daddy. And I, at the time, I lived in across Sea Lake, Boston, Charles River, and the bridge across, and MIT's right along here. And we rented rooms over on the other side and walked across over here. I lived with another woman, and during the winter this iced over, and that was pretty interesting.
So even though you were in the Navy, you weren't in a dorm, you actually were given an allowance to have an apartment?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, they didn't have dorms or anything like that.
How long was the meteorology program supposed to take?
It was 9 months.
And what were they intending for the graduates?
For you to forecast.
So they would station people around the world?
Yeah, afterwards I went to Lakehurst, New Jersey. And then I went to one that was right on the ocean. For a short period. But see, Daddy and I got married and pretty soon I was pregnant. So I only lasted, they didn't let you stay in the Navy once you're pregnant.
They let you get married though.
Yeah. Yeah, but so they do now, let women stay in and get pregnant, but they didn't then.
So he was, let's go back, and he was your professor, mm-hmm. and so you started dating him? What were your first impressions of him?
Well, Daddy was, he's so such a good teacher, and he had such a way with words. I always liked that, but I can remember the first time he started to date, asked me out. I said, I want to see your ID. He looked so young.
Oh, you want to make sure he was older than what? 21?
At least as old as me.
Well, he's younger than...
No, he's older. Oh. But the same year. He was born in May and I was born in September. But
he had a baby face.
And I don't think he'd ever dated women or anything, so he was pretty, and I remember saying, I want to see your ID.
He probably thought you were tough as nails.
And I think the first thing he did, what did he buy me? Gosh, I don't think I was drinking wine in those days. I don't think I drank. Maybe it was for hours. He bought me something expensive. Might have been flowers. It couldn't have been wine, because I didn't drink. I don't think he did either. You know, people didn't drink that much. Young people didn't drink that much in those days.
So did you get married within that 9-month period?
Yeah, see, and I was having to get a divorce. And I'm not even sure that divorce was completely fine when we got married. But then we did it again, got married again, just to be sure if there was something.
Yeah. Huh. You have 2 marriage certificates. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know if I kept them, but I did. Yeah.
So even though you were married, you were sent off to another station.
Yeah,
and Dad
was... I got pregnant right away, too.
So then 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, so the worst thing as far as trying to forecast was, see, it bothered me because we had to forecast for planes going out over the ocean, but we didn't have feedback from out over the ocean. Because, you know, they didn't have satellites, and you had to draw your own maps, and you had to go from data. And oh, I hated it because I didn't feel confident of it. So I was glad I didn't have to do it too long, a few months.
Be responsible for people's lives.
Oh, I know. I just, forecast for people going out over the ocean when you don't.
And they didn't have ships
they didn't have data
in the ocean?
With data, no.
Passing back mm-mm. information?
Mm-mm.
That's a mistake.
No. We used to get the data on the telex. You know that? I've kind of forgotten now. And then you'd plot, and then you'd draw, and then you'd see from that where it looked like there might be a storm coming. So it was kind of hard. And I used to think to myself, I don't have a lot of imagination about this. Well, first of all, I never had lived where they had snow and, you know, those serious storms. I'd always lived in California. So anyway, I didn't have an awful lot of confidence. Well, a lot of people, and a lot of the guys will just bluff, you know.
The other meteorologists.
Yeah. You know. And it, because that science was not a very, it didn't have enough information. No, see, and I hadn't grown up watching the skies all the time. Maybe if I'd been an Indian, Lee watches the skies. As an astronomer, he watches the skies more, you know. But I didn't grow up watching the skies all the time. So I wasn't a natural meteorologist.
Is that why you did that cloud watching project later on in your
life?
For
Daddy.
Oh, you did that for Daddy.
Oh, yeah, Daddy. Yeah. I was interested, but...
And Daddy had meanwhile been sent where?
To Hawaii.
So you were married, but completely separated at that point.
Yeah.
And he was sent there to be part of the
I'm trying to think, why did he go again? He had gone there first, and then he had been sent to MIT. Then he went out there again. Yeah.
So this must be pushing 1944 now, right? Because you were pregnant with Kirk?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Kirkie was born
in
45.
So it's got
to be late 44. Yeah. So the war is actually drawing to a close.
Yeah, you know how I read the papers now, but I never followed the war. During the war, and my dad's off in Saigon, and he met Tom there. They were both there. He was on the ship, and Tom was put ashore on the island. Solomon Islands, not Saigon, Solomon Islands. And things like that. There's an article in the paper about that, about them. And my dad, you know, he kind of loved war in a way. You know, the excitement.
He studied the history of war,
the
too.
The excitement, yeah, of the war. And
but your mom was afraid.
And
he was on
yeah,
ships.
In the meantime, see, Mom was in Long Beach. And Arlene was just 19, and she was marrying Darris when she was 19. I was trying to tell her, don't do it.
Was Darris going off to war?
Yeah. Now that I think of it, he did. He went in the Navy.
And during the war, your mother was able to survive on the money?
Oh, she worked, I think.
She worked? Mm-hmm.
And she moved up to Sonoma towards the end. I don't know exactly when. Oh, when I got pregnant and I came out, she was already in Sonoma, but that was the end of the war was ending. Yeah, Kirk was born right when the United Nations was founded. That week. I remember hearing it on the radio. So winding down.
So how did your brothers and sisters fare during the war? Jack was in the blimps.
Yeah, he was in the blimps.
And were there heavy casualties in those?
Not that I know of.
That was a fairly good place to be.
Yeah, Bob was on the submarine. He had some bad experiences. You know, and he used to write the ship's log in rhyme. He always rhymed everything. As if he could have been one of these people who... Just talk.
Talk in rhyme?
Yeah, the black...
Well, the rappers.
Yeah,
he could have been a rapper. He just did it naturally.
Yeah, he could have been a rapper.
Oh, those submarines must have been terrifying.
Yeah, I've gone on. Did I take you on the one, the Tautau? It's the one they have out there at San Francisco. That was when he was on.
He was on it? Mm-hmm. Well, I went in a Russian submarine that is docked out near Disneyland in California. Some story of how they got it, but it was claustrophobic. Claustrophobic.
Yeah, well, that the Tautog is up there in San Francisco on the water.
So you've been on the submarine he was on. Mm-hmm. How'd that make you feel?
Oh, well, just like you said, it's very claustrophobic. Yeah, so he was there, and then, of course, Tom was in the Marines. He was on through all the way through.
And he never left the military,
did he? And
he
stayed in, yeah. He was in the Korean War.
Was he an officer?
No.
He was always
enlisted.
Enlisted?
It's like, you're not reading that story that we're reading, but we're reading this story about Australia, these soldiers that are traumatized and they're in this war, and one of them is a sergeant. And see, when they come up in the enlisted, like he started a private, and the first he'd gotten so much trouble, it was hard for him to get to be a corporal. He used to get in trouble when he was just a kid, you know, at 17. But once they get to be a sergeant, if they want to, they can study to be an ensign, an officer, but that puts them into an entirely different category. Most enlisted who come up and get to be sergeants never want to be officers.
Is it kind of a working class thing?
Yes,
they don't want to cross that boundary.
It is. It's a they're buddies, you know, but it's a class thing. Yeah, it's a working class thing, and. He was like that.
And your dad? He fared well. He traveled a lot.
Yeah, well, he was on the Navy ship and he cooked, you know. He was a cook.
Well, none of his ships were in the battle zone.
I guess they were off on the outside shooting. He talks about, and he did get kind of deaf, both he and Tom, from the shooting off the cannons and whatnot. Yeah, he, you know how long he was there, because he was home when I went home. Well, by 5:45 he was home. I forgot to tell you that when, after Pearl Harbor, at Berkeley, they had these rules that you had to keep your the curtains black. They had called a blackout. They blacked out the area.
Think of how different the technology is back then, that the idea that you could just black something out and nobody would be able to find it.
Yeah, right. That's the way it was. And I guess it was just before I graduated, because when I graduated, somehow I must have had my parents' car, and I was taking my girlfriends over to, we were going to go to San Francisco. And these railroad tracks, they were all dark. But I guess there was a red, somebody was holding a red lantern. But anyway, I didn't see it right, and I just was going through, and this train was coming. So I just really stepped on the gas and got us through. But that was my close call. I just didn't see it. That was part of, because of the blackout. And, you know, and I guess he just had a lantern over here, you know. Anyway, I did that. Scared us all. You forget fast those things. Because basically we didn't have cars. You know, going to college then, people rode bikes and walked, and not like now where everybody has to have a car. The ferries were still running over to San Francisco. You could go across with a car or as a passenger across to San Francisco on a regular. That's the way you go.
But the bridge was built.
Yeah,
right?
But most people didn't have cars.
Oh. Huh.
So we were still going on the ferry. It was fun. It was regular.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore.
Well, they have a ferry. I don't, not frequently like that.
Or the tourists. Well, should we stop? Let's see, you're married, the war is ending, and yeah. So you head on into family life. The 50s, yeah. Next time.
Okay.
Okay.